Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, leave us a 5-star review. Email us with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Hit us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 Score. Cody, the Bulls, as of this summer, have 3 alphas, and they also have 3 Olympians.
Most likely 3 Olympians. Prohibitive favorite to replace Anderson Varejão on the Brazilian national team is none other than Chris Felício, your intrepid young Bulls backup center. Good way to describe him.
Yeah, so for a little bit of background, this afternoon the Warriors announced that Anderson Varejão, who was slated to play for the Brazilian national team at the Olympics in Rio that start next week, has a herniated disc in his lower back, and he will be ready for training camp, but he will not play in Rio. And then Mark Stein of ESPN.com, who is usually, you know, one of the more reliable guys on these kinds of things as far as Olympic stuff and other stuff, reported that Chris Felício is the heavy favorite to get that spot on the Brazilian national team.
Yeah, and the thing, Felício had talked to reporters about this a little bit over the summer. He'd been interested in the national team commitment heading into this crucial summer for him. It really is, because he kind of flashed potential at the end of last year of being an NBA rotation player. The Bulls expect more out of him this upcoming season. But his main reason he originally didn't commit to the Brazilian team is because he wanted reps this summer. He wanted to play. And he knew he could get that in Vegas Summer League. And if he had gone to the Brazilian national team right away, he most likely, I don't think, could have played Summer League. And he thought he would be behind Varejão and Nene and just not play a lot. Whatever Brazil was doing, he didn't think it was best for his development. But all along, he wanted to still be on the Olympic team. He was just trying to weigh kind of national pride versus best professional opportunity for him when you think of the big picture and making money and doing what's best for his future. So it's interesting. It would be great to see him play.
Yeah, and I think this ended up working out for the best for him because he got to play at Summer League, and he actually looked pretty impressive at Summer League. And now, kind of with this late scratch of Anderson Varejão, he gets to, most likely, it hasn't been made official yet, but most likely he's going to be on the Brazilian national team. And it'll be especially cool for him because the Olympics are in Brazil. They're in Rio, absolutely. So he'll get to play in the Olympics in front of his home country.
Yeah, and you mentioned 3 Olympians on the Bulls, which is funny. Obviously, Jimmy Butler playing for Team USA. They'll be in town tomorrow, Thursday, for a practice. They'll be in town Friday night for an exhibition game against Venezuela. Uh-huh. And then Nikola Mirotic is playing for Spain. The only reason they don't have 4 guys on the Olympic team is because second round pick Paul Zipser plays for Germany and their national team. They just didn't quite qualify for the Olympics because they're really not good at basketball other than Dirk, I don't think.
Well, Harrison Barnes is on the team and he almost counts as a Bull because he's from Ames, Iowa.
He does not count for a Bull.
Ames Mafia.
The Bulls, I believe, are one of 8 teams in the NBA with at least 3 representatives in the Olympics across all the teams, the 12 teams, split into 2 groups. And Brazil is not in Team USA's group. So unless Brazil and the Americans run into each other in the elimination round of the tournament later in the Olympics, they won't play in pool play because you play 5 games. But you'll see Felício and Brazil probably play teams like Spain, Argentina. So it'll be cool to have another Bull just
Isn't
out there
France
on the
in their
floor.
Group too?
No, France and USA are in the same group. That's pretty much the only big pool play game for Team USA is against France. I think it's their last pool play game. I was looking it up earlier. That'll be interesting to watch because the French are very good at basketball too, and usually provide some of the toughest competition through
the
years.
They have a lot of NBA guys on the team. Nicolas Batum, Boris Diaw, Rudy Gobert.
Yep, and Rudy Gobert is interesting too because, I mean, there's a guy who can affect a basketball game and at least make, you can build a defense around him, and I know we're getting off track here a little bit talking about Jazz
Tony
and
Parker
and
is
going to
play on the team also.
But, I mean, I mean, do you expect Felício to play a lot for Brazil? I mean, we know Nene's out there. We don't really know the other big men. They're just like guys on Brazilian club teams or playing elsewhere.
Well, is Thiago Splitter on the team?
He's not, because he's hurt. He's not going to play. So that's the reason I think Chris Felício can see himself get some minutes. But that's a cool thing. So we'll keep tabs on that. It should be official in the coming days, I would guess. The only other, I guess, hard-hitting Bulls news, actual news we have
today. Not even really
today.
News, it's just kind of a rumor at this point.
It's kind of an update. Chicago remains in consideration still to host the 2017 All-Star Game, according to Scott Kushner of the Advocate newspaper, and that's based in the New Orleans area. And New Orleans is still the front-runner to host the game, he reported. New York and Las Vegas in the mix, too, still. So it sounds like four cities still in the running.
I have thoughts on this.
Let's hear them.
I think they need to, if they're going to do it in New York again, they need to pick one place to do it. Because I was at the All-Star Game there in 2015.
In Brooklyn.
Well, no. See, this is the thing.
What's the deal?
Here's what happened. The All-Star Game itself, the game on Sunday night, was at Madison Square Garden, which is in Manhattan, right in Times Square. And the Saturday nights, like the Friday night Rising Star Challenge and the Saturday night dunk contest and three-point contest and all the Saturday night stuff, that stuff was all at Barclays, which is in Brooklyn. So they had the stuff all spread out. And, you know, with New York public transit being the way it is, super unreliable, super crowded, it was really hard to get back and forth between places. So if they decide to go back to New York, do everything at MSG or do everything at Barclays, and don't make people go all the way across the city into different boroughs.
Shots fired at the New York City public transit from Sean Hyken on your Chicago Bulls podcast. Where else are you going to get that?
I mean...
Props to Chicago. Chicago's public transit actually does a terrific job, usually. I know we always get really mad at it, but we take it a lot, and they do a really good job in the winter with bad weather.
I've had mostly good experience. I've had three winters in Chicago now. I have had, I could count on one hand the amount of times that I've had a really bad experience on the CTA.
And it's usually user, like, not operator error, it's like customer related. Like, someone's sick or some idiot's playing on the tracks or something like that. It's not even CTA's fault, you know what I mean?
Right. So, I mean, Chicago, I mean, they could certainly... They have certainly the right amount of hotels and stuff. It's a city that has hosted big events like this before. Yeah. They could handle it. Personally, I'm a little bit torn because it would be cool to have it in Chicago because that means we could cover it without, you know, having to go to our respective employers and ask for travel budget or anything like that. But I also, like, the last 2 years, New York in 2015, yeah. Toronto this past year, I've been at All-Star, and it's been in cold weather cities. I would so much rather have it back in New Orleans, because I want to go to New Orleans.
So do you think the All-Star game would be a good consolation prize in 2017 for Chicago, not getting the 2016 Olympics that they bid on way back in 2009?
Well,
that was a disaster and catastrophe averted by Chicago. But hey, have a different big event that doesn't invite the whole world. Just invite the whole NBA to Chicago.
Right, and I mean, it would certainly be interesting. I you know, the Chicago fans obviously are great, and they would really embrace it, especially since, in all likelihood, Dwayne Wade is going to be voted as a starter by the fans because he's one of the most popular players in the world, and Jimmy Butler is, if he stays healthy,
now.
Two-time All-Star. It's pretty likely if he stays healthy and has the kind of year he's had the last couple of years, he's going to make the team, whether it's as a starter or selected by the coaches as a reserve. So having a couple of Bulls guys in the All-Star game... If it was in Chicago, that would be pretty cool. Especially, I mean, hey, what if Derrick Rose has a really good year in New York and he gets voted in?
That'd be fun. Oh, that'd be awesome. I mean, he can put up good numbers in New York, no doubt.
And it's not like he'll be refreshed. And it's not like, because in the Western Conference, it's almost impossible for any guard to get into the All-Star game because you've got so many guys you're competing against with Steph and Russ and Klay Thompson and Chris Paul. In the East, it's like, okay,
it's
you've got Kyrie,
John Wall,
Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler.
Dragic a little.
I guess. I mean, that's Wade, obviously. But, like, that's basically it. Like, I think there's a decent chance, especially, you know, with the New York vote, because, you know, New York, you know, that's one of the biggest fan bases. They'll have a lot of votes. A lot of Bulls fans still have a lot of affection for Derrick Rose. So if he's playing well, I think he might still get some votes from Chicago. So... It's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. It sounds like New Orleans is still the front runner, and I am not opposed to that at all. I had a very good time in New Orleans at the 2014 All-Star Game.
I like that we've already declared three alphas. Rondo did that for us. We didn't have to do any of that.
Yes.
Three Olympians here. And we're already declaring two Bulls All-Stars for next season's All-Star Game. Just, I mean, here we are. People are wondering how many games the Bulls are going to win, which brings up an ESPN basketball forecast,
yeah,
too. A very numbers-heavy, analytics-based 40 and 42. Was that the projection?
They predicted 40 and 42 and tied with the Knicks for ninth in the Eastern Conference.
On the outside looking in. But we're predicting two All-Stars. We are not yet predicting wins. I think we might predict our win totals like the day before the regular season starts. But we could talk about that now. I mean, do you think 40 is kind of the range? Do you think, well, what would you make of that, Sean?
Anything from 38 to like 45 would not shock me. Anything more, well, anything, I mean, it could go lower than that if like the season just completely self-combusts and, you know, guys, the three
injuries.
Alphas clash, or somebody gets like Jimmy Butler gets injured, or, you know, Dwayne Wade has a really steep decline, or, you know, somebody clashes with Hoiberg and like he gets fired in the middle of the season, which I don't think is going to happen because he's still got four years.
Yeah, he bought
left
a lot more.
Deal.
I think the signing of Rondo and Wade bought a lot more time there because the Bulls be better. They need time to make that work.
Like
still.
I could see a scenario where the season just goes completely off the rails and they go into the low 30s, but I think anywhere from 38 to like 45, 46 at the top end is pretty reasonable to expect for the Bulls.
So you're saying the prediction model kind of did its job?
Yeah. I think if I had to guess, they will probably make the playoffs as like the 8th seed or this maybe the 7th seed. But
tied for 9th with the Knicks, we can just boot one of those first 8 teams out and it'll come down to like regular season finale. Bulls-Knicks, one game left in the regular season, they're both 40 and 41, face each other for a shot to get the 8 seed and play LeBron and the Cavs. And the defending champion Cavs with J.R. Smith, obviously.
Yes.
Kyrie.
Knicks legend and Bulls legend, J.R. Smith.
Absolutely. But, I mean, Bulls-Knicks could both kind of be in that same, I guess, predicament.
Uh-huh.
Or chase there for the final couple playoff spots. So we talk about when are the Bulls and Knicks are going to play, guessing if it's on Christmas Day, opening night for the first game.
MLK
whatever.
Is also an option. They'd like to have marquee games there.
Like, those matchups are going to be not just, I mean, headline-worthy because of the participants and just the individuals in them. They can carry playoff value and meaning, you know, because those teams are kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, and the head-to-head record is one of the things that helps decide playoff tiebreakers. So if that's a scenario that comes up, then those games actually are going to be significant.
Yeah, and some of those games, the tipping point, of course, will be the fourth quarter of games. The Bulls let too many of those get away last year. Off the top of my head, they had an awful, awful loss to the Suns at home after leading, I think, by 16 or something
They let the Suns score 10 points in the third quarter, one of their best defensive performances of the year, and then I think the Suns scored 42 points in the fourth quarter. I think this was before they fired Jeff Hornacek also. This is when they were still with the coach that just completely had the season go off the rails. That was just not a good look at all for Chicago.
Yeah, on that note, Father Primable asked us on Twitter, what would your ideal fourth quarter lineup be for these Bulls? He doesn't want to know about starters. He wants to know about the guys finishing games, and part of that will obviously be matchup based, circumstance based, depending on who you're playing, what their personnel is, if they go big or small. But Sean, thoughts off the top of your head, who should be the closers for the Bulls?
I think you probably have to have the three alphas out there.
I would agree.
And then, see, this is an interesting, because I still feel like, and we've talked about this, we got another question about what's going to happen with the power forward position.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how we think they should probably start Mirotić at power forward just for shooting, even though
spacing
Taj Gibson
the
is the better player because they don't have really any other floor spacing. But I feel like if it's a close game, you kind of have to have Taj out there for defensive purposes.
Yeah.
But you could also play Taj the five. He's played some five before, so you could go small and start Mirotić and Taj, or you could just go to a defensive lineup and start Taj and Robin Lopez.
Yeah, and I mean, the NBA still gives you 742 timeouts in the fourth quarter.
Uh-huh.
So you could do a little offense, defense, too, if you use the timeouts correctly, and sub Doug McDermott in at the four for an offensive possession and hope you can get him off the floor somehow for defense. That's easier said than done, because if you miss a shot or the other team doesn't take a timeout, there's a live ball there that you can't really do much about. But, I mean, that's just an option still, but there will be a lot of tough decisions for Fred in that regard. But yeah, you gotta have Taj or Robin Lopez out there for defensive purposes, anchoring, I think, at the five. We'll see what Robin Lopez can bring offensively, and if your three alphas are playing well together, it's not as much of a concern what your center's doing offensively. But if they're not, or one of them's out for whatever reasons, matchup-based or injuries or something, rest for Dwayne Wade's case a few times, I'm sure, during the season, then you might kind of give a nod more to an offensively inclined player in the post. And the question we also had that Sean referenced was from Chicago Hitman via Twitter. What's going to happen with the power forward spot? We expect Nico to start, Taj to be the backup, but Bobby Portis really needs to play too. How does that all work?
Oh, I think Bobby will have plenty of opportunities to get minutes because, you know, we've talked before about how, you know, and I just mentioned it, I feel like as a starter, you have to go with Mirotić just because you don't really have any other shooting in the starting lineup unless Jimmy can get back up to where he was a couple years ago as a three-point shooter. So I feel like you have to have Nico just because he brings that thing that nobody else in the starting lineup really brings, which is shooting. But yeah, Taj is going to play a lot of minutes because he's one of their best defenders on the roster. But the thing that I just mentioned about Taj is he can play the four and the five. He might play some minutes backing up Robin Lopez as well as some minutes backing up Mirotić. So, or, you know, or maybe Felicio, they decide to send him down to the D-League for a little bit because they have a D-League team now close that's by. Local, close by, the Windy City Bulls out in Hoffman Estates. I think there will be plenty of opportunity for Bobby Portis to get minutes.
I think the opportunity will come. I think you need to temper expectations about how it will come. Like, don't expect Bobby to play, like, 22 minutes on opening night. There's always attrition due to injuries, just due to drama, due to rest, due to everything. The Bulls know the injury game better than anyone. So Bobby's chance will come. But if you think about it, you got 96 big man minutes to dole out between power forward and center. And the Bulls have five of those guys, if we count Chris Felicio contributing some sort, I don't know, 8, 10 minutes a game, something sure. like that. Five of those guys. That doesn't leave a huge chunk of minutes for Bobby Portis. And I know Fred has entertained a little bit the idea of playing Doug at the four for a couple minutes here and there. That chips into it. So I think his time will come if he can outplay Nico or outplay Taj for long stretches or when those injuries happen. So I think he'll get his minutes. It's just going to be a little jumbled and choppy, I guess, is kind of my guess. And here's a fun fact I think you need to remember.
Okay.
Bobby Portis is 21.
Yeah.
He's the youngest player on the Bulls, I'm almost positive, unless Spencer Dinwiddie is younger.
No, he's been in the league for a couple years, I think.
Bobby Portis is the youngest player on the Bulls. Remember, he got drafted into the league after 2 years at Arkansas. So you think, I mean, oh, he needs his chance already. Well, he's 21. Like, his chance in big breakout year doesn't have to be this year. I don't think they're expecting it to be this year. He's got a lot of time. He's under contract several more years under team control, even after this one. Like, he's going to have every chance to be a starter, be a go-to kind of guy for him in the coming years if he makes the most of that. So that time and chance, I think, will come.
The other thing to keep in mind is that this is kind of a do-or-die year for Mirotić because he...
Yeah, that's true.
He had a very strong rookie season. Last year, he was a little bit more inconsistent. He obviously had that health problems in the middle of the year with the appendectomy.
Finished stronger, though.
Complications. He finished pretty well at the end of the year, but he is going to be... He's making about $5 million this year. He's going to be a restricted free agent after this season. The Bulls will be able to match any offer he gets from another team, but... If Mirotić doesn't have a good year... And a team decides, you know, we still really like his potential, and they throw the kind of offer at him. And keep in mind, he'll be a third-year player, so he won't be like a Gilbert Arenas rule player where teams can only offer him the mid-level. So a team could pay him $18, $19, $20 million a year if they really want to stretch four, even if he doesn't have a great year. When you look at some of the guys that have gotten paid, that's not really out of the question. If the Bulls decide either that they want to go in a different direction from Mirotić or that he's too expensive for them to keep, that's going to open up some minutes for Portis in the future. This is obviously getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but as far as Portis's minutes, it's going to probably be because you have to remember that last year he didn't play at all at the beginning of the year, and then he started, you know, once Noah started
December.
Right, like once Noah started having injury problems, Pau started sitting out a little bit here and there. He got in, he had that really great stretch, and then teams started actually scouting him, so his production fell off a little bit, and then he was kind of in and out of the rotation. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened again this year, or maybe... Again, I talked about this earlier with Felicio. Maybe if Portis isn't in the rotation for a while, they might just decide to send him down to the D-League for a little bit and get some reps there.
Yeah, and I think we can say this much. Taj is going to get hurt. And
whether that makes him miss games or not,
we don't know.
Get hurt.
At least, I mean, with Fred in the current regime, He's allowed to miss games if he's hurt.
Right.
Instead of our favorite story, I think
you're
we've
from
referenced
Brooklyn.
It.
Play like it.
I think we've referenced it before. Taj with, like, the grade 2 strain in his hand.
Wasn't he playing with a torn ligament in his thumb for, like, half the year?
Yeah, like, so basically every time Taj would get a rebound in the NBA, you get your hands chopped.
Right.
They're hacking at the ball. They're pushing you. Like, your hands get hit a lot. Even if you don't have the ball, you're just, like, running into people. And Taj basically said it hurt like hell for a couple weeks every time he tried to do anything. And he told Tibbs, and Tom goes, "Where are you from?" And Taj goes, "Brooklyn." He's like, "All right, that's what I thought." And then, like, Tom pretty much just walked away. This is Taj's recollection.
Taj told
the
story.
Yes, it is. And it's just hilarious to hear him tell it. Because he's sitting there like, "Damn, I gave everything I have." And he's like, "My hand hurts a whole lot." But he is allowed to sit out now.
I feel like even now Taj is sort of underappreciated with how much he does as far as playing through injuries and...
I mean,
being willing to start or come off the bench. He's never
beating.
I have never heard him complain about anything.
I have not heard him complain either. And we talked to him after a lot of losses, a lot of hard losses.
He kind of became the go-to guy in the locker room as far as quotes, because usually that guy is Joakim Noah, but this year he wasn't in a great mood because of
contract status
and also just the situation with having his role reduced. And then in January, he has the shoulder injury, and then he's not around a lot. So Taj kind of became our go-to guy in terms of getting quotes after games, because he always is very even-keeled. He has great perspective about, you know, what this means for the team, like, what, you know, how they can get back from this, you know, and what guys have to do. He's a very smart guy. He's a very smart player.
And Jimmy Butler has a little bit of the Joakim Noah moodiness in him after losses. So you're not going to hear anyone wax poetic at Jimmy's locker if the Bulls lose a tough game. He'll take responsibility usually when he needs to.
But it'll be a little
sometimes
bit more of a passive-aggressive.
Sometimes he'll subtly dole out responsibility to others when he needs to. But you're probably not going to be able to write your story or have a launching point for your story based off what Jimmy Butler tells you after a loss. And Taj provides a little bit more of that introspection and just really a great guy to have around the locker room for us, but his teammates too. But yeah, I do think he's been underappreciated. Last year, he sat out some longer stretches, I think, to get his ankle right sometimes. Because he's had so many ankle injuries through
the
years.
Other thing about Taj is he's the most loyal guy that there is, because he was, from everything that we've both heard, you know, behind the scenes, he was one of the most vocal guys as far as fighting for Thibodeau when the front office was going to fire him. He really wanted Thibodeau to stay. And he was also, during this past season, the most vocal defender of Fred Hoiberg when he was getting criticized. So he bought
into both.
Yes.
Because he always has the organization's and the team's interest at his their best interest in his heart. And not everyone can say that in the Bulls organization. But we did want to wrap it up with this question from Matt via email. So you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. He says, "Last year's bread and butter offensively was the high screen and roll with Derrick Rose and Pau Gasol. With Rondo not wanting to get fouled because he's not a great free throw shooter,
right,
and no Pau Gasol in the picture, will the Bulls go with more set plays or will they do more isolation? I really hope it's not more ISO." And I do want to point this out. In Fred Hoiberg's ideal world, there's not a lot of set play calls. He'll call some set plays out of timeouts a lot to start a quarter. He'll get Doug McDermott some set plays to get him a three-point look, get him involved. But he doesn't want to run a lot of set plays. He doesn't want to run many set plays at all if he doesn't have to. But as the year went on last year, they did have to call more, in part because Jimmy Butler asked for Thibodeau sets to get implemented from the previous year into what they were doing last year, so he could get touches where he wanted them on the court. Now, how do you think that plays into next year?
Well, if you remember, at Rondo's introductory press conference a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about how the reason that he was attracted to this situation and this team was because Fred's offense is a lot more read-based and a lot more just kind of reacting to what's going on the floor. So this is going to go back to which one of the three alphas has more control over the offense. If Rondo is the one dictating things, it's going to be a lot less set plays and more read and react stuff. If it's Jimmy that's handling the ball a lot, it's probably going to be more isolation stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think you'll see I don't think you'll see, first of all, as much high pick and roll by any means. I mean, that was the Bulls' bread and butter play for long stretches, like in the fourth quarter, a lot of times.
Robin Lopez is a pretty good pick and roll big, though.
Yeah, he's more, he's not a jump shooter as much as Pau is, so it's not as simple as just tossing the ball back and watching Pau take an 18-footer, which Bulls fans, I would think, would like to see this coming year's offense or something new. Instead of that, setting those old ways
a little
Bobby
bit. Well, Bobby Portis has a little bit of that mid-range
jumper,
so if he gets a lot of minutes, that could be a strength of his.
They certainly have options. Certainly, Fred Hoiberg wants it to be as much read and react and flow as possible. So, and especially with the Rondo point in mind that you just made, Sean, I don't think you'll see many set plays early on. I think you'll see the Bulls do the best they can to kind of implement Hoiberg's vision. Whether that plays out will be a huge key, a massive key for the Bulls
Major
in their
key.
Quest to get more than 40 wins.
Well, what it could...
Which they're predicted for now, according to ESPN models.
Well, I mean, of course, there's always just the chance that all of these plans about how this is going to be a more read-based offense, that could all just fall apart, you know, 20 games into the season, and Jimmy just takes over and starts isolating all the time. That's very possible.
Yeah, and Dwayne Wade wants isolation touches, too, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade is a guy that, you know, wants to... That's why the whole three alphas dynamic
there's
is the
so
most interesting.
There's so many politics involved.
This is
going to
be...
So many politics, which is what's going to make... The Bulls fun to watch next season.
See,
basketball politics.
This is going
to
be fantastic for us because last year the Bulls were mediocre and they were really not that interesting at all. This year, we don't know how good they're going to be, but there's going to be so much interpersonal stuff going on. There's so much potential for drama. It's going to be just a must-watch every single day.
Yeah, and we'll have a little bit, not drama, but it'll be certainly some interesting storyline subplots to watch here. Tomorrow, Tom Thibodeau. Back in Chicago with USA Basketball. He's an assistant coach on the team, expected to be available to the media. Jimmy Butler, all the rest of Team USA guys should be available. They'll play Friday night, and we have a question we need to ask Tibbs and then watch for on Friday night. What kind of reception do you think Tibbs gets from the United Center crowd on Friday night? That's what I'm going to be interested in. Not just seeing it on Friday. I want to see if we could get him to say just – something meaningful about that question.
Well, I don't know how much of a reception he's going to get on Friday night because he's not going to get introduced.
But he's going to be standing there. People are going to watch him walk in. I want to see this.
But you know that the Bulls management and ownership have orders to whoever's running the Jumbotron to not show him and give them.
Oh, that's what's very
gonna
be, true.
It's gonna, I think
very,
this is.
Oh, I'm going to have to count these, tally them up.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that. I'm going to Radiohead on Friday night, so I'm not going to be at the game, so we'll have to get that from you. This is going to be much more of an interesting thing, their first game, the Minnesota Timberwolves' first game next season against the Bulls at the United Center, because they have to introduce him then because he's the head coach. They'll say the head coach of the Timberwolves is Tom Thibodeau, and then people are going to react however they react.
I mean, if some of you guys want to send some advertising money our way, we'll slip it to the PA guy to say Team USA assistant is Tom Thibodeau, just so we can gauge your reaction. We're not above that.
No, we're absolutely not. We'll do anything for the content on this podcast. And if you have any advertising inquiries, you can email them to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com.
Yep, and so that'll be fun to watch. But we will catch you, as always, follow us on Twitter, at Hyken, at Cody Westerland, at Locked On Bulls. Catch us on iTunes, subscribe, please do subscribe.
5-star reviews also.
And Audio Boom, and what am I missing? Stitcher. But as always, thanks for listening. Catch you later.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4x gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.